Coming to you direct from the nerve center of the galaxy's greatest comic. This is the 2000 AD Thrillcast.
Borag Thung, Earthlets, and welcome to the latest episode of the 2000 AD Thrillcast Lockdown Tapes. And I am your host, as always, Molchar. And we're careering towards the end of 2020. Thank Grud. I couldn't even say 2020 properly then. That's a bad sign. One of the series that starts has started already in 2000 AD is Visions of Deadworld, which ties into Fall of Deadworld, which is Keck W and Dave Kendall's chronicling of, well, the fall of the world of the Dark Judges. But it's more than just a story about them. It's a story about the people who are caught up in this apocalyptic event. And it's something that's been running for a number of years. And Fall of Deadworld has really been one of those kind of long-term sleeper hits where it's picked up a lot of fans as it's gone on. It's developed into more than just kind of, you know, a standard Dark Judges story. It's not just about the body horror, it's also about the human characters and being caught up in all of this and ask some really interesting questions about the Dark Judges and their mission. So it was a delight to talk to Keck and to Dave about their work. Now, because of the way that Skype works, Keck is mostly a disembodied voice throughout. So sorry for those of you watching on video who are expecting three of us on screen, but you'll be delighted to know you get to see Dave and me crystal clear. So we'll talk to them in a second. Make sure that you have picked up the Christmas prog or placed your pre-order. It's a bumper issue, absolutely packed with stuff. These, you know, we talked about them on the podcast last week. These end of year issues, you know, we can't do annuals anymore, which is a real shame. But these are the next best thing. And they not only round off the year, but they launch us into the following year. In 2021, if this issue is anything to go by, it's going to be an absolute corker. So, make sure that you are signed up to the Thrill Mail, 2000ad.com/thrillmail. If you're not, there's going to be a special present going out in the lead up to Christmas. Also, keep your ears peeled for further announcements about various aural things that may or may not be happening in the future. And yeah, we're going to be announcing our schedules over the next week or so. So graphic novels for next year, both from 2000 AD and the Treasury of British Comics. It's going to be an exciting 2021. Now, without much further ado, let's crack on, as I always say, and hear from Keck W and Dave Kendall about Visions of Deadworld. So the Dark Judges are returned, well, have returned to 2000 AD with the Deadworld series, a new on Deadworld. And Deadworld has been one of those kind of slow burn sleeper hits that we've had with 2000 AD as we've explored the downfall of the homeworld of the Dark Judges. And it's wonderful to be joined by series writer Keck W, who's on audio. Hi, Keck.
Hello, how you doing, Mike?
Yeah, not too bad. I'm slow today. And also Dave Kendall, who's a series artist. Hi, Dave.
Hello, Mike. Hello, Keck. How are you doing?
Hello.
Now, you've both been on before to chat about Deadworld, but I think, Dave, this was a long time ago for possibly the original series.
I think it was The Dreams of Deadworld, yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a long time. That's 6 years ago. Was it 6 years?
Oh, my God, really?
Yeah. Six, I think.
What happened there?
Oh, God.
Thanks, Mike. 6 years is it?
Well,
another podcast.
I feel old now. My flesh is crumbling away from me.
That is quite the note to begin on. About something coming up, but like I said before we start recording, 2020. So everyone's entitled to feel
blame it for everything.
Yeah. So Visions of Dead World has begun. So I wanted to kind of catch up on what the series has done over the last few years and what the plans are, spoiler-free, for the future. Kek, do you want to start off by talking a little bit about Visions of Dead World and how this takes the story on from the previous series?
Yeah, kind of a boring non-answer to start off with. I'm not actually sure, and Dave might be able to help me remember, how we drifted into doing Visions at this point. I know we had some conversations about maybe doing some one-offs for a change rather than following the main story, but I'm not actually sure what point we kind of went, let's do this. But I remember running it past Matt, and Matt saying, yeah, sure, let's do it. And then sort of saying, well, let's call this maybe Visions, because we'd done Dreams before. For those that don't remember, we did four one-off stories featuring each of the four central dark judges a few years back, 6 years ago, and didn't really want to repeat ourselves by sort of doing a similar thing, sort of just revisiting Death, Mortis, etc., but instead wanted to show some different aspects of the timeline, of the character, of the story. So we wanted to kind of maybe play around with different parts of Dead World, different parts of its chronology. So in the opening episode, there's no spoilers there because that's already run, but we kind of start seeing some of the dots, the way stations along the way on the story. So we start sort of seeing glimpses of a time beyond the Dark Judges, when they've gone, when Death and those guys have gone. We see glimpses of horrors that await us down the line, really terrifying, nasty things. And in the subsequent episodes, we kind of jump backwards and forwards in time, as it were, from the beginning of the fall, and see and visit various characters along the way. Does that make sense? So it's a kind of a hop, skip and a jump through the Dead World timeline.
I mean, I think when we start palette cleanser for the, so we do a few little horror vignettes. That was the original idea, wasn't it? That a four or five part story with a few little branches and a few little bits and pieces, which would just take us away, give us something away from the main story, so we could just recharge our batteries on that, wasn't it? I think.
But then your memory's better than mine, Dave. Thank you.
It's kind of developed this eight part. You know, basically another book, hasn't it?
Yeah.
So we got to get back to the main story sometime. But yeah, I thoroughly loved the first episode. I mean, the Statue of Death with the teeth was just horrible.
that seems to have grabbed a few people's eyeballs, that one. It was weird because that was almost a throwaway idea. You know, what would somebody with a huge ego and vanity like him, what would he do? Well, he'd have a statue built. How big would that statue be? Oh, wait a minute. Teeth. Of course, Dad's a dentist. So, you know, statue of teeth. Why not?
I mean, who builds it? We won't go there.
Let me get back to you on that one, Dave.
I'm interested in how the series has developed, because I'll ask you to remind our listeners about the origin story of Dead World. The whole kind of fall of Dead World idea. But I'm interested in your thoughts on how things have progressed over the last few years, how closely things tack to the original idea, but also how things that have surprised you both.
Do you want to go first, Dave?
Yeah, okay. So it started off with this silly dream I had, but it's really progressed. I mean, really, it's Keck's baby in a way. I mean, I chuck in the odd idea here and there, but I'm thoroughly enjoying it, and it's constantly surprising, and it requires an awful lot of design work, because nothing's really been done apart from Bolland and maybe a bit of Arthur Ranson. with Half-Life. There's been very little done on Dead World in terms of design. So it's I'm enjoying it, especially because every little bit of it has to be designed from the floor upwards. So like I said, I mean, I've got about 5 sketchbooks now of ideas, and that's one of my favorite bits of the whole thing, of designing this world that Keck's throwing at me. Different, especially with this series. I mean, the Visions requires a whole design process for each episode. But I have no idea where it's going. I love Keck's ideas for the, you know, the maybe the future, especially with the Bone Man idea. But there's so much more to go yet, and it's constantly challenging. And I'm not at all jaded with the thing yet at all. It's I think we've done about 400 pages now, roughly.
Really?
Yeah. We're reaching that stage. I think we're at least 300, 350. So, yeah.
Wow.
Scary.
You've just blown my mind. Six years and 350 pages later. It's like, oh my word.
I know. I think every page is, right, I got to do another page. And you're thinking, that's going to take a while. But then you think, well, there's 300 pages behind me now. So, It's getting easier, but every episode requires something new to be designed, which keeps it fresh, really, I think. Hopefully it shows in each episode, I hope.
I can only apologize, Dave, because I am actually aware through working with you how much effort you put into, because I've seen the sketchbooks. They're monumental. So it's there's me pecking away on a typewriter and bless you, you've kind of got to bring all this stuff into life, you know, visualize it, sort of build it all. So I can only apologize for the work I'm creating.
Honestly, it's so enjoyable to get into the sketchbooks and just work out these concepts. So it's just, that's not a problem. You know, it really isn't. I mean, that's my job, isn't it? But you know, but when you say, you know, a huge army of soft soldiers, I mean, yeah, that gets that's easier for you than me.
I think I usually try and say something like, you know, one or two in the foreground with a hint of 18 billion in the background.
Yeah.
But what amazes me, Dave, actually is not to go off road, but for all that design work that you have to do, it strikes me, and you may start swearing at me at this point, that it strikes me that you're relatively quick, or it seems that way. So you'll turn your pencils around in a week, and then another week you go to fully rendered. I know you're putting in long, long days doing all this, but that strikes me as being quite quick compared with some artists.
I'm going to say something now, which hopefully doesn't get back to Tharg and Matt, that I like to have a deadline, and Matt's been quite relaxed this year, and I've been quite relaxed this year because I've been issued with no deadline, but now it's being published. I'm busy catching up. But yeah, I really do procrastinate. I don't think, and that's just 2020. I'll blame 2020. But yeah, it's we're heading towards the end now. I've got 2 more episodes to do, and you know, we're close to finish now. So yeah.
So deadlines give you a bit of focus, basically.
I like a bit of pressure, yeah. I work better under pressure than just here's as much time as you need, and you know.
Because quite often I tell Matt that.
Mike making a note.
quite often though, I get emails from you, Dave, like 1 a.m. or 1:30. So for all I know, you're doing like a 14-hour day or something. So
that's just I like working at night, but it's sometimes I do the school run, so that's a bit trickier. Yeah.
So no kind of busily ice baths.
Sorry? I don't know about this.
Judgment on Gotham, I think it was, where I'm pretty sure it was Bisley, where he was coming up right against deadline. Of course, the print slot had been booked, so I think it was Steve McManus or Richard Burton was round there, round his house, ice baths.
What?
I may be confusing my anecdote. No. Now that would be ridiculous, wouldn't it?
Oh, we lost them, buddy. Yeah, so Simon had to have ice baths to how did this help?
Keep him awake.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Jesus.
I'm pretty sure I'm not mixing my anecdotes there. I'll have to dig out my Phil Power Overload later and check.
The Bisley ice bath sounds like the worst sports team ever.
Very sharp. They're all like there, right there. with the Dark Judges, it's really interesting time for them, but particularly over the last couple of years, because we've got two threads running with them. You know, if you ignore any appearance in the main Dread strip, because there was Dark Justice, that was John and Greg Staples, and then Nick Percival took over on art duties. We've had Dominion and Torture Garden. And we had Nick and Dave Hine on the podcast the other day. Now, that's a different kettle of fish, in that not only is it Dark Judges in space, but it's kind of trying to do something different with the Dark Judges than what they necessarily have done before, and opens up lots of questions, as we discussed in the podcast, about the nature of the characters and the nature of horror and all this and the other. But with Fall of Deadworld, and this is something we have talked about before, but I want to explore it in some more detail. This is plugging into the history. This is the continuity of the strip, but again, doing something different with that. I want to get your views on how you have plugged into, rejected, moved beyond, paralleled what we already know, what people like John Wagner and Alan Grant have established in the Judge Dredd and Judge Anderson. You know, how do you feel that you've gone alongside, rejected what is already there?
Well, everything that John and Alan has done is canon, obviously. You know, you're on the shoulder of John, etc. So I've not thrown anything away. That's all canon to me. It's the stuff I grew up reading, etc., etc. I would say we've cherry picked elements of it that maybe we wanted to build up. I mean, the one where Anderson goes across to Deadworld, so we sort of see the Deadwood judges, etc. And Dave and I have Dave's based the designs on the art from all that. I really loved that. That was sort of had a feel of like almost a fascist crumbling world. So I think we've kind of borrowed some elements from that, things like the posters, the Nazi-like uniforms, just really used that as a seed of an idea. At one point I had, is it Half-Life, the character in there that Alan brought in, the kind of insectoid thing? At one point I started doing an outline that had him as one of the characters in the thing that Dave and I was doing, but it just felt too crowded. It didn't quite work. So I said to Matt, you know, I'm going to pull that out. And Matt said, fair enough. But I think maybe we might have had a reference to Half-Life in like a lab scene or something, Dave.
I think he was he was very, very subtly put into one of the sisters' vats of
goo. Yes.
He was featured, but I think you have to look very closely.
Yeah. So he ended up not being a character. But we're trying to honor sort of what John and Alan have done before us, by putting little, I guess, Easter eggs and things like that in there. But we're not following them entirely. We're just cherry picking elements of that. The things that feel kind of horrible or like feed into the sort of the zeitgeist of 2020 that we're living through, that we're channeling, if you get what I mean. Other stuff, we're not discarding it, we're just choosing to kind of it's to one side. It's not been discarded, but we're not emphasizing it. We're just cherry picking bits that feel like they have the requisite sort of horror, dread and awfulness that we're trying to channel in what we're doing.
I mean, I changed some of the design aspects. I mean, I looked at, you had Bolland's Dead World, which was basically the post-genocide bit. Then you had the bit with Greg. Greg did a story where Mrs. Gunderson or Death was dressed as an old lady. And he went medieval type of... And Arthur with Half-Life, where you had this whole swathe of the story in Deadwood, and it's a much more up-to-date dystopian, you know, quite Russian feeling, gloomy concrete nightmare, really. So I took that as my design. That was my design Bible in a way that I said, right, okay, I'll ignore the medieval stuff and we'll concentrate more on making it sort of brutalist concrete. Deadwood will be more about brutalist concrete, decaying. When concrete decays, it's got metal struts in it. So that gives me an idea that you can have a skeletal building eventually once it decays. And, it, you know, so there's things I have rejected. There's things I changed. I didn't fancy drawing all the little details on the eagle, the pterodactyl thing every single time I drew a judge. So I streamlined that down a little bit for just to allow me to draw it easily each time I drew it. But also... hinting at the old, you know, the 2012 Dread movie, which was much more a stripped down design aspect. I thought that will work better for me, probably bring it up to date a little bit more, but it's still got the sort of pterodactyl feel. And it also, that played into the designs of the bikes and everything else and all the ships. So there's kind of a design, I've kind of got a design element going through it all, but it's quite loose at the moment. It'll probably get looser as things decay and things fall apart.
I really loved the the architecture that Brett Ewins and Brian did, the kind of almost semi-organic stuff. So you had the skyscrapers that looked like they were made out of bone, and one point there's like screaming faces, isn't there? And it's sort of in it. So I think we're trying to find a compromise, aren't we? A route from collapsing Dead World through to the thing that we saw in the early 80s Dread strips, of this kind of techno-organic thing.
And I like that's how sort you of explain that as well. How do we get from buildings to these sort of Geiger-esque biomechanical things? And I like the dead solid bomb that you used in the last book, Doomed, was it? And the idea that it mutates the fabric of reality and changes things into this terrible organic mess, really. It's great.
I felt we needed a mechanism to get from point A to sort of, point X, as it were, further down the timeline. How does that work? And then, I don't know, I just sat at home thinking about dead fluids, and I thought, well, of course...
Oh, we lost him. Keck?
You still,
of course, there's going to be different states of dead matter.
Keck, we just lost you there for 30 seconds or so. Hello? Oh dear.
Is it?
I think it's him.
Dead solid.
Keck, we're losing you. It's dead solids, isn't it? Oh, is it me?
No. It's because you're coming through loud and clear.
Okay.
Hey, Keck. Oh no, that is a proper mashed up signal.
Really?
So sort of maybe that's
Hi, Keck.
Hello?
Hello, you are coming in and out.
Yeah, I think it's a bad USB.
Ah, right, okay.
How about now?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Yeah, I think the USB at the back of the PC was getting twisted. What I'm going to have to do, I'm just going to unplug, replug it in so that I'm not tugging at that USB.
Oh, there he goes. At least it's not my Wi-Fi crapping out on us like it does on a regular basis.
Where are you based?
Oxford.
Is it okay there, or is it just a bit?
It's fine. The problem is that my wife and I both work from home.
Right. Yeah.
And I do a lot of podcast recording, and she does a lot of online meetings. She works at the university.
Yeah.
So. Sometimes we're constantly on the same signal, and it will wait until we're about 20 minutes in, and then it will just crap out completely.
Right.
Madness.
How about now?
Yeah. Yeah. Loud and clear.
Yeah, somebody wrapped a hairdryer lead around. So I think I moved slightly and then pulled the USB. So, wow. Where were we?
Right,
Dead Solids, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so we were looking at a mechanism to get from earlier in the timeline, a relatively skyscraper type landscape. Can you still hear me?
Yes. I don't think the Dark Judges want you talking about Dead Solids.
Yeah, as soon as you started talking, you started coming in and out. Again.
Oh, no.
Too many of their plans.
How about now?
Yeah.
Let me just lay all the leads on the table so that there's no movement. Right. I'll try and sit perfectly still. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Can you hear me now? Okay.
Yeah.
Or is it fading in and out?
There's just a little. I don't know whether it's crosstalk or whether you're fading in and out. But you know what? Just go for it. Just
okay.
Just start talking.
So we needed a mechanism to go from a world that's relatively like ours to this kind of techno-organic architecture of the Brett Ewins, Brian Bolland era, where you've got these skyscrapers that look like they're made of bone and cartilage and stuff like that. So. The sort of mechanism we come up with was I was thinking about dead fluids, and then I thought, I wonder if there's other states of matter for dead matter. So I started thinking about dead vapors, and don't chuckle, dead solids, etc., maybe dead plasma. So we came up with this idea of a bomb. So they let this bomb off, and then it starts actually playing around with the very nature of matter. So even the architecture and physical aspects of where this bomb hits, stuff starts getting mutated, and it starts changing into the sort of version of dead world that we know from the early 80s. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
No, absolutely. Because it was interesting. A point I think someone made on 2084 the other day was that they had assumed the series was going to be about how the Dark Judges came to power. But actually what they've ended up getting is the bit after that point where and I think we've talked about this before, Kate, you know, they're beyond the tipping point. It's got to the point now where what we are witnessing is the decline after that tipping point, which it's, you know, is an interesting distinction, I feel.
Yeah, I think we are also going to see glimpses. Well, not think, I know we will see glimpses of how they come to power, because in Ava Eastwood's own story, we sort of see parts of how things get increasingly corrupt, how the judges of Dead World start sort of twisting into this awful sort of totalitarian thing. There's a episode coming up which Dave's illustrated, I think, which kind of touches on that.
So the Ava.
Yeah, the Ava one. Ava, no spoilers.
Yeah. Yes, that's relatively straightforward, that one, isn't it? But it's still incredibly. It's much more of a personal story, so that should be interesting. Not so much of the dark, you know, there's not so much of the supernatural. That's more like a police procedural, and that works really well.
But it also shows us a little bit of, you know, what was going on, what that world was like earlier in the sort of the collapse. You know, is Sydney still, he's still a judge. So, I think we're hopefully be seeing sort of more glimpses of that side of things. So we may see bits as we go up to what Mike calls the tipping point, as well as the horrible slide downwards.
No spoilers, but that particular Ava Eastwood story has huge implications for the main thread of the story as well, doesn't it? So that should be interesting. I'm honestly excited as a fan to see how you take that Visions of Deadwood story and it feeds into the main narrative, which hopefully we start next year. And you know,
it's got all sorts of ramifications, isn't it? Sort of between the characters in the main story.
Yeah, there's a collision coming, isn't there?
Yeah. I don't think it's going to be a pleasant one for all concerned.
Oh, really?
Damn. We'll have to see how that one plays out.
One of the things that I'm interested in is about the characters who aren't the Dark Judges, because you know there are kind of humanity, there are empathic through line in the story. Keck, do you want to talk a little bit about these characters and how you approach the victims, I guess, in this situation?
Yeah, I mean, from the get-go, when we first started talking about doing Fall, it seemed really important to have something that was based on the ground, so to see the Fall through the eyes of ordinary people, as it were, and have the Dark Judges as these sort of off-camera presences for a while, these really huge, horrific things. We know what they're capable of, but it's nice to see, well, nice, that's the wrong word, to see them through the eyes of ordinary people. Like, what would they look like to, say, you and I, you know, these kind of supernatural entities, really dark, horrific presences. So, yeah, from the get-go, we wanted to kind of base it on the ground. Start off with an ordinary family, see how the initial stages of the fall affect them in terms of like weird weather, climate change, that sort of thing, disruption to their life, a breakdown in normalcy. If they were living in a city, they would be seeing this firsthand, but we've got them out in Deadworld's equivalent of the Midwest, as it were, so they're a little bit more remote. So things have kind of crept up on them. The collapse has started, but these people, maybe they've seen hints of it with stuff going on, but they've not taken the full brunt yet. So we, as the readers in the first series, were able to kind of see events through their eyes, catch up with the pace that they're sort of seeing things. And then, of course, Judge Fairfax comes into their life. He's trying to get away from the city. He ends up sort of bringing hell down on them. I wanted to kind of play with the idea of we're used to judges generally in Dredd's world being, a force for justice or otherwise. So I wanted a character that might be a reverse Judge Dredd, as it were. So what if our judge was a corrupt, looking out for number one kind of character? What's his backstory? How did he get to be that way? So these are the kind of starting points that we set up in the first series. An ordinary family, a judge comes, but he's not a good judge. He's on the run. So that's our start. That was our opening gambit, our opening perspective.
And how, let's put it this way. Is it difficult to keep that humanity going when writing something like about horror? Because I remember listening to an interview with a writer, I can't even remember who it was, who said they have to resist the temptation to continually turn the screws on their characters, just because, you know, that's something that drives forward narrative and things like that. Do you sometimes think, oh, I'm being a bit mean here?
I mean, this is going to sound weird, I guess, to people who don't write, but you do get engaged with the characters. They take on a life of their own when you're working with an artist like Dave, really brings them to life. They start to feel real to you. You know, maybe I should get out more often, I don't know. But you start getting a feel of who they are, what they're about, what their motives are. After a while, they start telling their own stories. And you can't help but feel sympathetic towards them. So going back to your, you know, turning the screws on them. Yes, you need drama, you need tension, you need to turn up the heat on them to get a good story out of it. But I can't help, you know, as a writer and as a human being, to feel sympathetic towards them. I know at points that, you know, some of them are going to have to die. I'm going to have to kill them off. We did that with Patty a while back. And I have to say, I will be sat at my keyboard and I will have a lump in my throat, Mike, when I type those words of, you know, the light goes out of so-and-so's eyes. you know, that sounds... People are going to go, Jesus, call the straitjacket guys.
I remember, Keck, when you were writing Damned, you were just sending me emails. I'm sorry, Dave, I don't know what I've done to this poor family, but they were being bumped off at a feral rate. And, you know, poor Jesse was getting, mother getting killed, grandfather gone. And I can remember you just apologising to me all the time about what you were doing to this family. I didn't care. I was right, let's go with granddad's death now.
you cold, heartless man. Do you know, I'd forgotten about the first series because 6 years. But yeah, they go off in short order, don't they?
Yeah, we don't half knock them around, don't we?
Yeah, I think I hadn't quite got as emotionally invested in those guys because I'd only had them a few episodes for them. Now we're into, like, I don't know, four series of Jess, etc. You kind of think, oh my God, you know, I, at some point I'm going to have to bring the axe down on A, B, and C. And it's like, oh my God, where, you know, I'm going to be a wreck. You're going to get these blubbering emails from me, Dave, going, oh, you know, even Siren, I really like, you know, she started off as a villain. And now we kind of see there's more layers to her as well. We've kind of brought her to life. I've got a fondness for all these characters.
It's like the Bone Man thing, though. It just, I mean, the fact is, I think going back a little bit into the conversation is that lots of the fans say, well, we know what happens at the end of Deadwood. That's the mantra I always hear.
Yes.
We know what happens. Yes. We know, but I think we're trying to say, well, do you really know what we've got planned or what is actually going to happen? I mean, Bone Man kind of is our answer to that, well, there could be something more beyond Dead World that we're looking at. There could be something bigger or something even bigger than the Dark Judges behind all this. I mean, and so I think the idea is that our characters may not quite have the, you know, final end that people seem to think. Some of them, you know?
Yeah, it's not as clear and dry, cut and dry as some people might think.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, I love stories with underdogs in them anyway. You know, it's my kind of favourite stories, really. So here we've got a young woman, Jess, you know, going up against these monsters, you know. Can she make a difference? Can she change things? Can her, you know, this weird ragtag alliance of freaks, misfits and outsiders, can they actually change things?
And the way you twist the Judge Child idea as well, that, you know, really Owen Chrysler would be a perfect Judge Child for the Dark Judges, wouldn't he? But they don't get that. They get a normal girl with no psychic powers, especially, you know, nothing majorly powerful about her. She's just empathetic and the opposite to what Death is. And although she does do quite a lot of killing, doesn't she?
she's starting to get into
starting
it.
Get, I think, ruthless,
yeah.
There's that aspect of the dual nature of the Dead World alternative universe thing, that their Judge Child is actually just a normal kid with a family, loves her family, and is just, you know, having to deal with this huge supernatural force, which, you know, she's not doing a bad job considering.
I think, you know, that gun training that Gramps gave her came in handy.
That's before we killed him.
Yeah, here's an assault rifle.
Well, I find that fascinating. I'd like to see where that goes. Well, she hasn't met Death yet, has she?
No, that's going to be an interesting encounter.
Yeah. Although she's disappeared off into some sort of alternative universe at the moment, hasn't she? She's been sucked into the sister's realm. So, yeah.
Well, you know, she came after Fairfax. Fairfax went into the city. Jess, bless her, goes on a quest to get Fairfax back. Well, it's now going to be, it's up to him to man up and show what he's made of, you know. Yeah. Is there good inside of him? He's got to now try and, you know, find her. That's the next step in their relationship.
Cool.
So I remember the, just talking about the whole, you know, we know how this is going to end thing. I'm just thinking back to the kind of original visions of Dead World, where you had... the wonderful sight of four very bored dealing with essentially eternity on their own terms. You look at Mortis and you know his world of decay, which is and his garden and everything, which I think was wonderful. I think there's a question there, a point to be made about the portrayal of kind of destiny and inevitability, and the fact that, you know, inevitability is at the heart of this strip. It always has been. You know, we do know in broad terms how things are going to end, but that doesn't mean that the journey is any worse. Like, you know, in any story that has a character who has a destiny, you know pretty much that they're going to fulfill that destiny. You just don't know how they're going to do it. And that's the point of the journey, you know?
Yes. It's life, isn't it? You know, we're all faced with our inevitable end as human beings, yet we do something with our time. We, you know, we hope, we dare to dream. It sounds corny, but we're seeing a reflection of that.
It's a journey rather than the goal, isn't it, for the Dark Judges?
Yes.
They're disappointed at the end, I guess. It's like, well... Is that it?
Well,
a few mushrooms, you know.
Death and Mortis, they got what they wanted, you know. Let's end everything. Well, what's left? Gardening.
And like a druggie, they need to go and do it again. They need that thrill of let's go to Dread's World and try it there, but it doesn't work quite so well.
No.
I'm sure there's a paper to be written about the kind of Nietzschean consequence of that kind of anti-life nihilism, you know. Yeah. the fact that when all life is gone, there is nothing. So if you know if the inherent
they need life, really,
exactly.
The
Dark Judges is that when they succeed,
yeah,
they continue. They are the life, you know. It's one of the It's the perversity at the heart of the Dark Judges that makes them so interesting as characters. That for all of the horror of what they do, they are philosophically and psychologically complex ideas. You know,
and they're tied to the living, aren't they? They are tied to the living. They need them as individuals, anyway.
They are also us as well, with all the pettiness and spite and shallowness. You know, for all these great plans and all the, you know, we're going to do this and do that. They're still squabbling and carrying on. You know,
there's. I mean, you talk about the statue made of teeth. You know, that is pure egotism, and at the heart of particularly Death, there is that. There is an ego there. There is that desire to control, and you know, you see the same ideas riffed off in characters like Thanos and whatnot, but I don't think any of them really go all the way in the way that Death does, you know?
Going all the way.
I I mean, he's just a petty. He's really just a petty psychopath, and always has been, with these just delusions of grandeur about what he actually, you know, he's basically fooling himself that he's achieving this sort of moral crusade. But there's nothing more to him than just a psychopath with supernatural powers, isn't he? He's that's all he is, really.
And a total control freak as well. You know, he's this master schemer. And going back to what you say, without the living, you know, he thrives, I think, in my view, on game playing and scheming and being the smartest guy in the room and all that. But, you know, if you get rid of everybody else, who's left, you know? So, yeah. Again, like you said, Dave, he needs fresh, fertile lands, other worlds to go to. Otherwise, yeah. Well, what is there? Well, it's like Trump and his bunch, we were saying earlier, you know, he's just going to play games with his own judges because that's all there is to sort of mess with, isn't it?
I think what was interesting as well, when we first started off, we said, well, let's keep the dark judges in the background. No one's going to get on board with the dark judges as some sort of rotting, undead politician controlling your life. And I'm thinking, actually, we might have been a bit wrong there. Don't get too political, but we may actually have been really wrong that people would not get on board with, and that gives an interesting idea. There could well be something in the future where we actually, there are people who are quite happy to be controlled by the dark judges.
It's fascinating at the moment to see a lot of particularly left-wing commentators in the States refer to the Republican Party as like a death cult.
Yeah.
You know, the worship of nihilistic power has only one conclusion, which is death. it is a huge point of view. I always love the idea of creators starting out on a path of a story and pulling back from what they consider to be excess, you know, oh, that's a bit too far. Yeah. And then the world catching up with them in various stages. It reminded me, I think it was Paul Cornell tweeted about how, you know, the one thing that John Wyndham didn't put in Day of the Triffids was lots of blind people ducking underneath flailing Triffids as they go to the shops for Christmas. Which, of course, it feels very much, I mean, it's very much part of the Deadpool series, but also part of Judge Dredd series, this kind of, you know, the desire to just carry on and, you know, the mundanity of I think it was an academic who looks at the authoritarian state in Malaysia. You know, he refers to the banality of authoritarianism. The fact that for most people it becomes almost background radiation, and because they just want to get on with their lives. And you can absolutely see, as Deadworld is literally, you know, the bees are dead, everything is crumbling around them. And like, no, it's going to be Christmas as normal.
is that the king who wears the little tight vests and has the poodle thing? Is that the Malaysian king? I'm just thinking of strange rulers that people really just worship, and you're thinking, what the hell are you playing at? There's a little, I think it's a Thailand king. He's like a little god king, and he lives in Germany now, but he wears little tight shirts and goes shopping for a poodle. But people worship him. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, really? It's, you know, I think that's the thing. With Deadworld for me is my safe place at the moment. And I think it is amazing how reality is actually just more bizarre than you could ever put down on the page.
Honestly, that's so right, Dave. I mean, there's been points where I've kind of, anything I've thought was satire, the world's only been about 2 millimeters behind it. You know, you put in some crazy sort of bizarre idea, and then 3 days later, you look on the internet and you go, oh my God, that's like, it's, you know, it's not that far removed.
Unless we're actually writing.
I'm sure Steve Ditko did that in a comic a few years ago. So the writing.
Are we just providing a blueprint for all this?
Oh no. Don't say that. Well, wait. if we are, I'm hoping there's some hope, humanity, and humour in what we're doing, and maybe that's the route out of all this craziness.
Well, there's a book called Warrior Cop, and it's basically about the militarization of the American police, and there's this line of guys on the cover, and it could be a line of judges, you know, literally.
Yeah, totally. You know,
The one of the big things about satire is that it's not necessarily about the future, it's about the now. But
yeah, exactly.
The roots of the future are in the now. So, you know, you look at the stuff that was happening in 1970s Britain when John and Carlos and Pat were crafting Judge Dredd and you know, strikes where the PSU, the public support police support unit, which was the kind of first proper paramilitary group of police in England being deployed against strikers. You know, this
yeah.
It was absolutely no surprise to anybody who lived in Northern Ireland or in any of Britain's colonial possessions. But, you know, there's the starkness of seeing, I think it was the Battle of Lewisham where riot shields were used, like long riot shields were used for the first time. And that must be a hell of a shot. But of course, you know, you extrapolate outwards and what you end up with is Judge Dredd.
But you end up with very specific things like riot foam and, you know, it's, you know, concrete foam, which seals the rioters in place. Or yeah. We have it, you know, it's here. It's bizarre.
It's not so much they're predicting the future. They're just talking about the present, which is... Yeah. A process, you know, and it doesn't take a genius to see where things are going, but it does take genius to be able to turn that into an amusing comic book.
Amusing.
A sedative type of thing. Oh, yeah, just read this, you'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, the put in Dave as well. I mean, Boston Dynamics, is it? They've got the robo horse, you know, that they're... No doubt DARPA are planning to use that against people in the next 3 or 4 years. So we'd all be surprised when that happens.
if we're allowed out.
Yeah. I'm not allowed out now.
the last year, who knows what's going to happen? It's, yeah. Mm. Anyway, moving on.
Now we've cheered ourselves up.
Yeah.
I'm going back to Dead Rule in a bit anyway. I'll be okay.
Well, let's just round off by talking a little bit more about the art on this, because this is a series which is very much kind of, you know, body horror and decaying landscapes, but also one sort of filled with action. Dave, do you find yourself have you ever found yourself in a situation where the demands of the strip mean that you have to kind of step outside of your normal style, or they challenge you in a way that you just weren't expecting at all?
I mean, the horror script, I'm actually quite enjoying the more, I mean, the great thing about the script, it has a lot of humanity in it. So I particularly, as a guy who seems to be doing a lot of horror and seems to be known for it, I quite enjoy doing the Jesse stuff and the more emotional stuff that for me, it's very rewarding, and it does break up the action and the violence and everything else. But, you know, for instance, at the moment, there's a little section with a lot of fighting going on, and I've just received a Cam Kennedy battle book, and it's just so informative about how to draw battles and how much that can inform. So I'm constantly looking at new artists and old artists to see how do I achieve that. I don't actually steal it, but it just feeds into my process that dynamic, especially Cam Kennedy, he has this dynamic for battles which has been informing me quite a bit. It may not show up, but it's something that I'm looking at. And really, that's the thing with comics, is you've got to draw everything in it. So one minute you've got cities being hit by pink bombs and things going off and weird creatures, and next minute you've got, you know, a small intimate scene. Yeah, I love it. I think that's important. I think I need that. If I was doing horror all the time, I think I'd probably get quite jaded, even though I enjoy it so much. But that's just the nature of being an artist, I think. You have to draw everything in the script. I think that's why comics are such a good training ground for.
And in terms of the kind of atmosphere, obviously, 350 pages of atmosphere. I'm interested in the, how to describe it, the vibe of a series. You know, just the feeling of it, what it inspires in you as an artist as you're doing it, and whether. Whether there are challenges to maintaining that feeling over such a long period of time, because you know you've got the opportunity to build something quite significant here in terms of pages alone.
Yeah,
to maintain that feel and have that slow burn over so long.
At the moment, I'm not having any problems because I think, as I said before, everything in Deadwood is almost new, so I can. I'm still haven't explored all the. I've got books. I never thought I'd have piles of Russian brutalist architecture sitting on my floor, which I reference. It doesn't always show up, but it's this stuff which kind of informs the strip. And I also look at a lot of photojournalism because I enjoy that. Seems to capture proper horror over maybe a film strip or a film of an event. If it's a made up fictional film, it doesn't have the same impact as say a book of journalistic photographs. So if I want someone looking genuinely distressed, I will look at photojournalism as a reference. I tend to drag lots of stuff in. I mean, unfortunately, I'm not in my studio. I could show you the absolute state of it and the books piled on the floor, but my internet isn't working there at the moment. But it's a joy to just drag new stuff in and to keep myself fresh if I can, because that's what I need to keep it exciting. And I think that's what Visions have done. This particular group of episodes has helped because it's taken us away from the general, three character kind of arc thing, which is going on in the main story. To expand us a bit, and then we can bring it back in, and hopefully when we get back to the main story, we'll be, you know, a bit fresher and a little bit more, you know, it's given us a break. It's been a palate cleanser in a way, if you can call Visions cleanse. But you know what I mean. It's allowed me to expand. We've had End of Dead World. We've had little sections inside, just intimate things in the hospitals and things like that. I'm not giving anything away, but we've got some interesting stuff in Visions, which. Yeah, just keep it exciting, keep doing different things and looking at different resources. And yeah, it's hard to explain really, because it's I every time I think I'm, oh my god, this is hard work, or I'm struggling, I think, what would I rather be doing? And there's nothing much else I'd rather be doing, so I always kick that back into my consciousness that, hang on a minute, you're doing a dream job here, you're being asked to draw what you want to draw. And there's not an awful lot of editorial interference either, which is rather unique, actually. Matt does let the artist do. He has trust in the artist to produce what they want to produce, which is very, very refreshing. It's not every company acts that way. But yeah.
And in terms of looking to the future, without giving too many spoilers away, as we've said, this series does have a very definite endpoint. But Keck, do you have that endpoint in mind? Do you have a roadmap, or are you feeling your way?
It's a bit of both, Mike. I have kind of, what should I say, dots on the road along, you know, so I know where my milestones are roughly. But I also leave myself loads of wriggle room for improvisations, because, I mean, there's literally not a week that goes by. I might be working on something else, and then suddenly I'll kind of have a flash of something to do with Dead World, and out comes another sheet of paper. Right, got to grab that while it's fresh in your head. So there's constant sort of new ideas, new feels coming into it. But yeah, there's a rough roadmap. There's a an endpoint beyond the endpoint that I've got in mind. But we are also feeling our way down that highway towards stuff. Anything could happen, you know, which going back to what Dave was saying, it keeps it fresh for me because, you know, one week I might think, well, I was going to do that with that character, but suddenly they reveal themselves in a new way. And you think, ah, that's, yeah, there's a new aspect there. There's somewhere new to go with that character. So that's what keeps it fresh and exciting for me.
Lovely stuff. Thank you very much indeed to Keck and to Dave for, if anything, braving through the technical issues that we suffered throughout. Hope you enjoyed that. We shall see you in 7 days' time for what may be our final episode of the year. I'm undecided. If I don't see you until then, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other, especially at this time of year. Earthlets, obviously, lots of people making sacrifices and making difficult decisions about whether to see family. But if you can't, I hope it goes well for you. And until next time, Splendig Verthwick.
Alert! 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 Full power levels dangerously high. Alert! Alert! Read 2000 AD every week. Ask your comic book store or newsagent now. Subscribe to the galaxy's greatest comic at 2000adonline.com.